I'm so mad that my headphones are still not working with Discord. I don't know how to fix it. I feel like I'm going to have to uninstall and reinstall Discord.
Can you not?
I feel like I have to. No, I can do it now because these aren't mine. But my Bluetooth headphones, like,
I just don't like it.
I've known for a little while that I've had an issue with it because when I try to do stuff on Thursdays with people, I fucking can't hear anybody through the headphones. So I've just had to go out loud, which is fine. But anyway, sorry. I'm ruining the vibe. I just
upside those ears with the antenna. Very cute. Very monster fuckable.
Monster fuckable. That's how I'm going to rate all of my outfits from now on.
I can't even be mad about it because, like,
on a scale from one to very fuckable by a monster,
Nova is definitely going to fuck a cactus man. So,
hey, everybody, welcome to the post-apocalypse.
Oh, cold open? That would be sick. That would be sick.
Right, everybody, welcome
by the way,
to the
spoilers for Monster of the Week.
Okay, but
LOL. Well.
We say this every time, though.
I know. Still, I do love to imagine the person who is that person who is like, oh,
me.
I didn't check out this podcast, but the most recent episode, they're like, I'm just going to start with the most recent episode. And it's the post fucking apocalypse. And they're like, yeah,
it is the post fucking apocalypse, too.
It is the post fucking. The fucking.
LOL.
Oh.
Everybody, give mad props to Zach, who currently has COVID and is still being a trooper and hanging out here with us.
Hell yeah,
mad
dog.
Mad props. Mm.
I hope you don't mind me divulging that to our audience. We can cut it out.
It's okay. No, now, when you're violating my HIPAA rights.
Now, when you say still here, you mean separate.
Yeah,
and
no,
remote.
He's not in the room with us.
No, that's true. We're not. Yeah, he's remote.
Zach is being a big, handsome virtual boy right now.
Hell yeah.
Big,
yeah.
Handsome,
yeah.
And virtual.
Do we get to enter the chat with him?
Badoop.
No. No. Okay. Let me lay out some ground rules. We're starting the post-apocalypse right now, and that means two things. One, it means that we are now on a timer officially, especially since we're supposed to have another recording right after this for the setup for our next game, which is Pig Smoke, by the way. It's going to be a great time. But we have a set time.
What a weird plug.
That we need to. What do you mean a weird plug? It's a plug for our own show.
You just like, it just seemed like almost forced.
I'm sorry to tell you this, Pat. I'm sorry to shatter the naive bubble that you've been living in.
And I have been living in it. Living it up, too.
She came down in a bubble, dog.
All plugs are forced, Pat. They're all forced.
Not if you're doing it right.
Well, okay.
Amen. Lots of lube.
Amen.
Oh, man.
It's really fun because David's actually sitting next to me now. So when I did that, I put my hand over his hand. And it was nice. It's nice to be able to touch my husband.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to touch your husband.
Well, I know that you're aware of this, too, as well. Yes.
Okay. So, hey, everybody.
They're brothers. They touch a lot.
Oh, I know. I was just flashback to the moment where, like, you guys were doing the whole Titanic thing.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I have no memory of this place.
I have a picture of it.
What?
I'll show it to you later.
Okay.
We're on a timer.
Okay.
We spent all of our childhood touching each other, not in an instant.
All right.
We killed Jill.
So anyway, welcome to the post-apocalypse. This is a show where we review, revisit, and just overall do a post-mortem on the game we just finished. And boy, does it deserve to die.
Oh, man.
If you haven't listened to that yet, leave here now.
You've already gotten spoilers.
Yeah, you've already received spoilers. It's just going to get worse from here. I guess it could be worse either way, depending on how you think about it.
Okay, so stop. We'll wait.
Yeah, we'll wait for you.
We'll wait.
Yeah, just pause this episode. Well, no. Stop this episode. Delete it. So then you have to re-download it and get those extra downloads.
Hell yeah.
I know what I'm saying.
David knows how to cheat the system.
Hell yeah.
I see you. Yeah.
Pull if you're driving, pull over to the side of the road.
Yeah. Turn off the car.
Listen to all 7 episodes of Monster of the Week.
God, we did 7 episodes.
We did do
that. We did 7 episodes.
And 2 setups.
And 2
so really,
setups.
Just start at the setup.
Sorry. Yeah. All 9 episodes of Monster
this
of the Week.
This is the 10th episode.
And subscribe to our Patreon so you can get
the bloopers,
which are just as long as the 7 episodes.
And if you subscribe on the right tier, then we will send you a book that you can sniff.
That's right.
Amen. I did the math. It took us 6 separate recordings, including this one, to do this entire arc.
Oh my God.
You know,
normally it's 3, maybe 4.
Yes, that's true.
I thought it was normally, no, I guess it is normally 3 because there's like 2 days of.
Usually there's the setup.
Yeah.
There's the game, which can be spread across 2 days, but at this point, it's pretty equally split with an all day versus a setup.
You're guaranteed 1 for setup and 1 for post-apocalypse, and then 1 or 2 for the game.
Right. No, that makes sense.
And we say 1 or 2. This one has been 4.
4.
Yeah.
This one has been 4.
But to be fair.
But guys, we have a whole section that's like behind the scenes. We have... There is a structure to the post-apocalypse.
David, good luck with that, with this.
I was about to say, David, when have you ever known me to follow structure?
It sounds like fascism to me.
It's true. David, David, are you a fascist? Legally, you have to tell us if you're a fascist.
AFAB.
So first off, no.
So speaking of structure.
No, sorry. No, I'm not a fascist. Not no, I don't have to tell you. I've been interpreted differently.
Oh my fucking God.
So speaking of fascism, we still haven't introduced ourselves.
Speaking of fascism, welcome to the post-apocalypse. For fascism causes the apocalypse. Anyway.
Wait, just to be clear, just to make sure, Zach, you are recording now.
Yes, I am recording.
Oh, God. That could have been bad.
Thank goodness.
It's a very good thing that all of my recording is in a separate room from you all because I'm coughing more than I thought I would.
Fine. Yeah. Good.
No worries. I'm
sick, literally.
Hey.
This won't even be the first time that we've recorded with somebody who's very sick.
I mean, I can't remember. Do we actually... It's been a while since I recorded a post-apocalypse. It's been half a year since I recorded a post-apocalypse or longer. Do we introduce ourselves
we still
in the post-apocalypse?
I think we say, hi, I'm blank, and I played.
Starting with you, Emma, we'll go around the room. We'll do Emma, Jell, then Pat.
Well, hi, I'm blank, and I played blank. Sorry, no.
hold on. First off, can we get our keeper introduction?
Oh. Hey, everybody. My name's David. I've been told that I run this show, but I'll be honest, I've come to doubt that hypothesis.
I'm also not sure who told you that, really.
Yeah, literally... I think I have.
I think it's a lie I've told myself.
I thought this was sort of a communist thing and we all took part, but maybe I'm wrong.
I certainly am
maybe
the keeper.
It's a fascist.
Maybe David is a fascist.
Anyway, I was the keeper for this show. Emma, please take it away from me.
Hi, I'm Emma, and I almost said I'm Nova. I am Emma. I played Nova Scotia, a half Martian, half Canadian pilot on a book. Zach, your turn.
Meowth. That's right.
Yes!
Thank you so much for bringing that back.
Really quick, one of my favorite quotes in all of the stuff that you've done for us, Jell, is... wow, you're playing 4D chess with us, Meow. that is my new favorite Jell quote. I love it so much. Wow, you're playing 4D chess with us, Meow.
I want that on my Toto soundboard.
Mm-hmm. We'll add it. All right, Zach, Meow.
Okay.
Heads up.
Hi, I'm Zach. Pronounce he, him. I played Lenny, a large space caterpillar of unknown origins.
Of unknown origins.
Accurate.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go. I guess all of you can just refer to me as Patty now, because if you got through our finale, all of y'all is nasty.
But, I mean, Dempsey's going to be here later today, so you could still be Big Patty Pat.
It's true. But I won't be. But I won't be in the room with Dempsey later, because, as you know, I finally got the court-appointed restraining order against him.
So, okay, no, yeah.
No. What?
Yeah.
No. 500 feet at all times.
500 feet.
It's going to make the next time they're in a game together really awkward.
It's going to be real
awkward. We'll just record remote. We'll make sure one of them has COVID in order to ensure it.
Make sure one of them has COVID.
Inject me with COVID.
Okay. Okay.
What a weird intro this has been.
Anyway, so you're Pat.
Yeah, I'm Patty, because all of y'all are nasty. And I played Rodney Redshirt, the totally human, nothing weird about him, mundane playbook.
Excellent. Del.
Hello!
There she is. There he is. Excuse me.
So I'm Jell. I'm Angelica, more often known as Jell. I played Fractor Og. And he's a Fractor. He's a space goo.
He has a Fractorate.
He does have a Fractorate.
He's got the certificate and everything.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I should have said this like a minute ago. Mm-hmm. But Zach, when I was re-listening to the setup, I heard a line that I somehow missed the first time, the every time that I've listened to it this many times and in person, where you say that Lenny grew up on the space version of the streets, which is hilarious.
It's true.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. That has nothing to do with Fractor Og. I just needed to say it.
Is the space version of the streets like Rainbow Road?
Yeah.
Do I need to say from Mario Kart? Is that necessary?
All trademarks to Nintendo.
If Nintendo would like to sponsor us.
There it is. Well. Dude, imagine if we got a Nintendo sponsorship.
That would be a...
Why would they?
You have plausible deniability. You could say you were referencing Rainbow Boulevard in Kansas.
That is, yeah,
that's fair. Or that I was referencing the Rainbow Road in Centaur World, which also exists.
Oh, you're so right.
And it's not our first Centaur World reference of the campaign.
Yeah,
no. Campaign of the...
It was 10 fucking episodes. It sure feels like a campaign.
Yeah, fair.
Amen.
Okay, well... We do normally have a structure to this sort of episode. I will at least outline it here in the vague hopes that we at least cover the ground that it suggests. First off is System Reflection, where we're going to talk about Monster of the Week as a game. We're going to talk about our experience with it, how we felt about it. And that also has a little sub-bullet point for what we got wrong during it, which I'm sure has nothing this time. Certainly, we didn't get anything wrong. I actually think we got it pretty right.
Off the top of my head, I don't think we did anything.
We'll get there and we'll explore. Maybe we'll remember something. After that, we have Stars and Wishes, where we talk about things we really liked or loved about the game. And that could be the system. It could be how we played it. It could be anything. And then wishes are like what we would like to do next, what we would hope for our characters. So we'll do that. We'll have a behind the scenes where we talk about some of the things behind the table that was going on during the recording or just sort of like interesting bits of information. Along with that, we're going to have a new special section that's what's the deal with Rodney? If you were in our Discord on the Cast Junkie server, Pat proposed early on that people suggest maybe what's going on with Rod, and he'll give a quasi-definitive answer for the Rod
canon
situation.
I put out a message on our Discord channel on the Cast Junkie server. Join if you haven't, because it's a fun time.
It is a fun time.
And I wanted listeners' theories on what's the deal with Rodney. And I put that out after like episode 2 or 3 aired. And I meant to do it again before we recorded the post-apocalypse. And then I was too lazy and forgot.
That's the way of it.
Did you get some?
I have a couple of theories that I'm going to read. And then I would like you guys to give your theories as to why Rodney is the way he is.
Oh, sure. That'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so then our final section is always listener questions, where we've collected some from Discord, from Twitter, for just general questions about the show, about the arc that we just finished, and then we'll sneak in a little bit like of a what's next, just talk a little bit about that for a minute. If we have time, technically we have to cover all that ground in the next hour if we're going to start the next recording on time. We'll see if we manage that.
But Dempsey is in it, and Dempsey is always late, as we know from Brindlewood Bay.
Well... this is one of those days where I can only hope that's the case. For now, let's start off with a little bit of system reflection. I want to hear from each one of you just like how you felt about Monster of the Week. In general, as a system, how you think it played on the podcast, things that maybe we should have done differently.
I have a hot take.
Yeah, go for it.
Do we want to open with my hot take?
Let's get controversial.
No, okay. So here's the thing. I think that for a space game, the monstrous playbook is way too OP because like we are in space. There's all kinds of weird shit. And like, how do I say this? 2.5 out of 4 of our crew was aliens.
Yeah.
yeah.
And so like, sure, I was in fact, I was very deliberate because when I was looking through the playbooks, Monstrous was the one that just sounded the most fun. I was very deliberate to create a character that even in a space setting would be especially weird. But I still feel like given the context of space and it being so like, cause Lenny's, species, Lenny's whole thing was almost as weird as Fraktarog, but Fraktarog, I don't know. I feel like Monstrous is just too OP for space. That's my hot take.
Can I respond to your hot take?
Absolutely.
I was going to respond too, but you go first.
Okay. I think actually I hear definitely the being OP, but I think Monster of the Week is also maybe a game where most people end up kind of OP one way or another. Overpowered, not original poster. And the thing is, like with most Monster of the Week games, with most campaigns, you rarely end up with a group that doesn't mostly have something weird going on with them over time.
Fair.
So I think it's not out of the ordinary that everyone is out of the ordinary.
Okay. Quick corollary before you give your respond.
corollary is the next episode. What are words?
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention, because I've been thinking about this, but my brain deleted it, but it came back. The biggest disadvantage of the Monstrous playbook is the fact that they cannot easily fit into society.
Mm.
And in the space context, that disadvantage is almost entirely moot.
You know what? That's fair.
So that's, right. That's...
No, I hear that.
I think that's the best point. Because what I was just thinking is that with Monster of the Week, with advancements, you have the opportunity to take things from other playbooks. So I think in a space setting, like stealing things from the Monstrous playbook can make a lot of sense depending on the type of character you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that really... I think the Monstrous is really well-fitting to a space scenario. But I think you're right. Like, it's harder to explore... I don't want to call it the negative, but the emotionally charged risk that comes with being the Monstrous.
Right, exactly.
In a space setting. I think you're right. That just played a little bit differently. It works since we're a comedy for this one.
Right, yeah, for sure.
But for a serious game, that would be missing.
That was going to be my main point, is that we played it as a romp.
Uh-huh.
And so stuff being ridiculously overpowered is fine.
It works.
This arc was an anime. Let's be real. This arc was absolutely an anime.
Yeah. Or an online cartoon.
And honestly, you say overpowered. What did you do that you think was super overpowered? You had really good rolls most of the game.
Yeah, and part of that was because I had a +3 to weird.
But that's that class.
Yeah.
I think
and you flexed. And you flexed on that aspect. You did a lot of weird stuff. Therefore, you rolled weird a lot.
Yeah.
I think in the case of Powered by the Apocalypse, to be overpowered is just to be granted a lot of narrative control. And I think I agree, since it was harder, your fictional positioning was always really good as Fraktarog.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you always had really solid fictional footing.
Yeah.
which meant that even like if you had rolled failures, like you might have been put into difficult situations, but I don't think ever Fraktarog was really challenged in the course of the game.
That's fair. Yeah.
Except kind of having to swallow their pride for a minute.
And yeah.
Pretend to be,
okay, that's true.
I don't think mechanically Fraktarog was particularly challenged, although even then you did have to roll, I think, at one point to like resist your lust for knowledge.
Yeah.
And I thought it would have been interesting.
High.
The thing is, I thought it would have been so much more interesting if I had rolled poorly on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I rolled well. And I still tried to, like, you know, when Fraktar Hufenschmerz was talking about the pistons, I tried to like bring in the like, oh, that does that. No! I'm resisting!
I love that whole conversation. Yeah. That was great.
Dude. I know it's early for stars.
No, we're not. Zach hasn't even had a moment to talk yet about the system. We're right. not moving on to the next thing.
Go ahead.
Hold on to that thought. Zach, please say something.
I have two thoughts that are sort of meta. So the audience didn't hear this, but we had a really hard time finding a way to end this arc.
Yeah.
And I also feel like part of the reason why this arc dragged out is because we were desperately trying to flesh out all of our characters.
Mm.
In the same way that the original, like, Star Trek movies are, I'm so sorry, I know I'm going to get, like, downvoted to hell for this, but, like, they're kind of weak, versus the Star Trek shows, which are really strong, as, like, really long-form narratives. As an example of Monster of the Week kind of playbook style mm-hmm. of story writing, I don't think that Monster of the Week plays very well for kind of a one-shot, quote-unquote, kind of setting, and that you need to have something longer form to make your characters work.
Especially with big magic.
Exactly. But we were able to make it work because we made it so much more about the big bad monster than about the characters by the end. Or at least I felt like it kind of turned that way. Maybe other folks have different interpretations.
I do think that Monster of the Week is definitely a game that really shines with more of a campaign where you can have your character mm-hmm. over many
you
an
get
arc.
That good character development.
Which yeah. like makes sense for all of the stuff that Monster of the Week pulls from, because every show that has the Monster of the Week set up, as much as it is about like finding and fighting monsters or fucking them or both.
Hell yeah.
Like, it's really about the characters who are the center of that story. I mean, like,
mm-hmm.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, as an example,
yeah.
is literally named after the main character.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, we've struggled with this a little bit anyway, because we've tried to play some Monster of the Week off mic, just, like, for fun. And one of the things we noticed is that, like, A, if you have a lot of people, then it gets unwieldy really quickly. Mm-hmm. The game really shines mm-hmm. with like four at
or
max.
Less.
Yeah, three or four
yeah.
is probably the right number, although you can, of course, do it with fewer.
Yeah.
The majority of our fellow podcasts on Cast Junkie that are Monster of the Week have three
yeah.
players typically.
And so that, and then even when you have fewer players, arcs just take longer than with some other games because you're both dealing with the mystery aspects of it. You're dealing with a lot of character interaction, both between the players and also with NPCs and with the world. And you like you want that stuff because that's where the good stuff is. And then also you have the aspect of like finding and fighting whatever monster you have at the end of that. And I feel like we moved through those phases as well because, like, we had the stuff where we're interacting with each other and with our crew, and then we have the stuff where we're interacting with the Vix on the planet, and then we have the stuff where we're interacting with the big bad monster.
I don't think seven episodes of story was wrong for this.
Yeah, I agree.
I totally agree.
I think that if we had gone a more serious note, I think we could have cut it down to maybe five.
Yeah.
Sure.
But mm-hmm.
it would have been like extra long episodes like The Watch.
Yeah.
At five.
But we need, because it was a comedy, we needed that room to just mess around and bullshit and goof. And so although seven episodes for some people may have felt like a strain, I don't know if we could have cut it any shorter than that.
Yeah.
Not while continuing to have it be what
it
was.
I think the pacing was right.
To Zach's point about the resolution being tough for us in this one, I think, yeah, what people don't know, if they weren't there in the recording room, is we have like an entire alternate ending.
We have a whole alternate ending.
It's not on Patreon yet, but it will
be. I am Bloop. I was about to say, I am Bloop God. Yeah. If you guys want the alternate ending, I can edit that.
Patty is Bloop God now.
Yeah. I am Bloop God now.
Yeah.
He's the one who's editing the bloopers.
Yes. So to revisit again what Zach had mentioned about this being sort of tough to come together, I think in a one-shot setting, just in general. Sorry, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm thinking about Brindlewood Bay right now and comparing that in my brain, because Brindlewood Bay sort of has like the dream mystery mechanics for me. Like, I love the procedurally generated mystery thing, and you just sort of like write up clues and NPCs for flavor, and then you sort of build the mystery. But Monster of the Week isn't that way. Like, I had a concrete monster in mind. I had like, I knew what they were doing. I knew like all the clues I gave you, I already knew ahead of time.
Right.
I just sort of had to figure out what to tell you when. Right. And that's also a great way of doing things. Like, I've run a lot of D&D as well on the side. And like, anytime I do mysteries in that, it's the same sort of way, where it's just sort of incrementally given out over time due to various successes. Monster of the Week very much is like that, but better, because there's a formal way for investigating. That's better than a system that's not so much focused on it. Right. But I did feel like that when we got to the end, then the resolution is still very much up to the players. But at that point, for me, the guardrails came off, because like, I had been sort of guiding you towards the monster, like towards what the mystery was. But once you had that answer, Monster of the Week doesn't give you any, like, I don't give you guide rails for how to fix it necessarily. That's a lot more up to you. Like, maybe with more concrete monsters that have like specific weaknesses, it's a bit more targeted or intentional. Mm-hmm. But obviously this one was more broad. And so probably if I were to pick a monster again, I would do something where that has a more known finite ending maybe gives you all some interesting like questions to resolve, but otherwise isn't quite so open.
Well, and I think leaving it open for this, for us to decide how to quote unquote defeat the monster.
Yeah.
Was the right move, since we aren't like continuing the story. Mm-hmm. If this was an actual campaign where this was the podcast, us doing Monster of the Week, there would need to be like, okay, depending on how we defeat this monster is going to drastically change the course of the story. But we didn't have that issue with this game, since we were just stopping with this mystery.
Yeah, I think I'd agree that at least for what we were doing, it makes sense to have a very open potential ending. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, I don't know, you know, if it's a werewolf and we shoot it with a silver bullet, okay, done.
Yeah.
Okay.
All of that said, I also want to say that while for everything that we do with the podcast and with this game, It doesn't work perfectly for us, or it takes a little bit more time. I still feel like we did a good job with it and we had a good time.
Definitely. It was so fun.
I also, genuinely, Monster of the Week is a really well put together game. I think it is one of the best in the PBTA umbrella, as far as like doing exactly what it sets out to do, while also like playing really beautifully to what makes a game really fun to play for a lot of people.
And it's so I think we proved with this, it is so setting agnostic.
Yeah.
Like, if the story you're telling has a Monster of the Week sort of framework, then the setting does not matter beyond that.
Yeah.
Like, you can work Monster of the Week in. Whatever story you want to tell that's in that sort of vein, you can do with it.
Plus, Monster of the Week in space isn't like a new concept. Like, there's like TV series that are set in space that have the Monster of the Week feel.
Some classic Star Trek's that way.
Classic Star Trek. Doctor Who.
Yeah, Doctor Who's a perfect example.
It is.
Yeah, I was also thinking Lost in Space is a little bit that way.
Lost in Space is kind of, especially the original from like the 60s.
Yeah.
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 Anyway, was there anything else you wanted to expand on your points, Zach, before I think we're ready to move on to Stars and Wishes?
I'm going to retract my statement that the Star Trek movies were weak. of the backlash
no.
that this podcast will receive.
You know what?
Don't leave your message in this chat, Zach.
Okay.
You are allowed. You are allowed to
not like something.
Exactly.
Well, he didn't say he didn't like it. He said it was just weaker than the show.
And also, for the record, I think that the original Star Trek. I'm going to get even more controversial here. You ready for that? I'm gonna protect you with a shield, and everybody can attack me instead.
Thanks.
I think that especially the original series. Was really, really incredible for its time, and it was very, very important for all of that. When watching it now, because of the ways in which people have changed their expectations of the shows that they watch and all of that, I do think that it is much slower paced, and it can be kind of difficult to stick with it for longer. And that is the most diplomatic way of me saying that. I'm still going to get backlash.
Well, and then I will also, like, totally contradict myself here and say that, like, the 2009 Star Trek, I think, is a masterpiece, just fantastic film. And it's, like, it is totally Monster of the Week stuff, and it does it really well. So I'm totally contradicting myself here. But
I also want to put my hat into the everyone...
Everyone hate me instead.
Yeah, I've seen almost no Star Trek. I've only seen a couple of episodes of Next Generations. I love Data. That's my entire opinion on Star Trek.
Thank you, Gail.
I saw a few of the original series episodes. I had a friend in college that was really into it and tried to get me into it. I watched like 3 or 4 episodes. Not my thing.
My goodness.
Like, I think that there are absolutely incredible things that Star Trek has done. It's an incredibly progressive show, for one thing. And there are technical things that it did, that it was the first to do, in the same way that Star Wars was the first to do a lot of its thing. I also think that with everything that it was trying to do, the fact that it doesn't necessarily always hold up as the most entertaining or interesting TV show by modern standards, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
True.
One thing I did want to work into here before we move on to Stars and Wishes is we have...
Star Trek has those.
We have what we got wrong vibe as well with this bit.
Oh, right.
And the one thing I can think of, like, we've talked a little bit about how, like, some of the decisions we made could have gone different ways.
David almost didn't give me 3 questions at one point.
Well, that's true. There's a few times where we almost screwed up the rules. I'm certain there is something we got wrong at some point with one of those, because I kept getting read a bad situation switched around in my head with investigate a mystery, because they're the results are fairly similar, but just different enough that they're not one-to-one.
Because the way the rules read to me was you get 3 questions if you roll this high. And then if you roll this high, you get to create a question, but you also get 3 questions in general, one of them being the created one.
And I think we sort of came to an understanding of that, where basically what you did is you got 3 questions, and one of those questions you could
create
yourself.
Anyway, so but the thing that I wanted to mention was there's a very powerful move in the game that's Act Under Pressure, right? This dates back all the way to Apocalypse World in many ways, and it's something that, like, I love catch-all moves in PBTA. Like, I love the day move and the night move in Brindlewood Bay for the same reason. But the way the options that you're given as the keeper are so broad with handling that, and then there was a specific instance where several times the ship had to dodge something, or there was like some danger to the ship that some piloting needed to be done, and I felt a little bit underwhelmed by what Act Under Pressure put in my pocket for handling those situations. So I would probably, in the same spirit of like writing a rote, like not exactly that, because that's specifically applied to magic and for Lenny's playbook for
The hex.
But I would definitely have written a custom move for space maneuver type stuff.
I also had more
defined consequences and stuff on a hit and on a partial and all that jazz.
I also think that there is a Monster of the Week playbook that's the driver, I think is what it's called. And I think one of the moves that they either get for free or can take has to do with like getting a bonus to like being in some sort of difficult driving scenario.
Yeah.
And probably in retrospect, like maybe going with the driver for Nova, since she did as much piloting as she did, might have been a better option. But I also really like a lot of the expert stuff that I went with for it. I don't know. It's one of those things where like you almost just want to start from scratch and like put together like a homebrew thing for it, where you just pick whatever moves you feel like match the character.
Yeah, for that sort of composite playbook. Okay. So that's how we feel about Monster of the Week and how we feel like we applied it in our context. Let's talk about the game overall. Let's talk about Stars and Wishes. Let's talk about things we liked. If we could spend a very long time in this area. I know we all had a blast playing this. So let's start with a star piece and we'll see how much time that takes us. So who wants to go first? Anyone can.
I got one ready.
Yeah, go for it.
My first star of maybe only star. What?
For time.
Oh, that's fair. Okay, sorry. I thought you were being like, this is the only thing I liked about this entire game.
No, I like so much, but the big standout is I want to give a star to both David and Jell. Because the Fractur Og and Fractur Hufenschmerz dialogue back and forth is probably the best dialogue in the game.
Yeah, it's really good.
So good.
Excellent.
Thank you. It was a fun time. Fractur Og is such a bizarre
character. It was really funny to me that as I dissected the voice that Jell was doing for Fractur Og, because like when I was going to voice Hufenschmerz, I was like, okay, I don't actually do a very good Hufenschmerz, like I don't do a very good
Doofenshmirtz
impersonation from
from that's okay. Herb sounded nothing like,
oh yeah, exactly,
like Ferb, because Ferb barely talks in this show.
So I was like, well, I'm just going to do the voice that Jell's doing, and I'm just going to strip out the because like I can't do that the way that she does that, and like
I still don't know how you rolled an M.
Chronicle.
It breaks my brain that you can roll an M.
But it was very funny to me that when I stripped that out of there, what I landed on was like a very pseudo Austrian accent, and I was like, oh no, now he's a stereotype.
I was about to say, it's okay, you sounded like, yeah, every bad guy doctor from every property ever.
But just remember that he's a horsefly, so it's fine.
That's right.
I don't want to derail, but like, I know that Hufenschmerz was like, you know, came in during the game, but like, was that character going to exist in some other form before he became Fractur Hufenschmerz horsefly? Or did that just happen in the game entirely?
That was like entirely organic.
Oh my god,
Fractur Hufenschmerz.
There wasn't like an unnamed doctor type character in the belly of the beast.
So no, I didn't know you were going to go there.
Oh, that's fair.
I had a handful of NPCs prepped for this. One was Herb. I knew Herb was going to happen. I didn't know how or when, but I knew Herb was going to happen. Herb and his brother. So I had that planned, but then there were a handful of NPCs that I was going to have more people on the ship, but then as those scenes started to flesh out, I realized that we were spending too much time there, and if I added new NPCs to meet there, we were going to just spend more time on the ship, and that wasn't where the interesting stuff was.
Right.
So I ended up axing them. So actually, like, I have a handful of characters that I had planned for the game that just never happened.
because it's fine in one way or another. They'll make their...
Yeah. But then everything else, like, every other character we meet, which there isn't that many, though, right? Like, we mostly meet Herb, and we meet Hufenschmerz, and we meet the Metallic Titan.
And we meet Hinaeus.
Superman 77. I guess we meet Hinaeus, yeah. But Hinaeus is just... he's
horrible.
Yeah. So, what I realized very quickly was all of your characters were so big that if I inserted too many NPCs in the story, it was going to get too confusing, too busy. Hufenschmerz was totally off the cuff. Hufenschmerz was we needed a character there, so I made one.
I love that. All right. Well, star for that. But I also want to star Zach for ending the fucking game with
Oh, yeah.
I want to raise. Like, oh, raise. My God. Just like chef's kiss of character development.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Fucking I appreciate beautiful. That.
Who else has got some?
I'll go next. This kind of builds on what y'all have already said, but I love that literally everything was a pun and that y'all just kind of let us go down the rabbit hole of whatever dumb idea we came up with. Just being able to run free with our unhinged humor was so pure and good.
Yes.
Unhinged is definitely
until the last episode when it was not unpure, when it was very unpure.
Yeah.
But
all of us are nasty. I would love to give a star to everybody, all of the players for the characters that they came up with and the ways in which they played those characters, because I think everybody did an incredible job.
Yeah, second.
And big, big star to David for somehow wrangling this group.
This herd of cats.
Yes. Somehow wrangling this entire fucking group into something like a plot. And pulling all of that together so that it all came together by the end. And bringing back the Evergladdy.
Yeah, oh, dude, the Evergladdy!
Bringing back the Evergladdy. Holy shit.
Also, David, assemble was right there. You could have used the word assemble and saved yourself so much heartache.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think I did use the word assemble a few times, but not.
No, you
enough.
Did not.
Not. I guess. Okay. Well.
But then we're event.
I don't remember it.
Yeah, that's true. But then, like, yeah, the Iron Giant, the first Avenger.
Oh my God.
The
metallic titan.
You're right. Warner Brothers, don't sue us. Or Warner Brothers, please sponsor us.
Yeah.
LOL.
Hey, we made some fantastic. Like Iron Giant OC shit over here. I mean, Warner Brothers, come and get some.
You cannot say that way.
Come and get some, WB.
WB, we're over here coming together and you could join us. That's all I'm saying.
I'm scared.
Come join the circle.
Warner Brothers, come through.
Warner Bros, come through.
So I did want to do a quick star as well on the table. I assembled this group knowing that we were going to go off the rails.
We were going to go places.
Yeah, that we were going to go places and I was just going to follow where y'all led.
I mean, you knew the moment you put Pat and Jell in a game together.
Yeah, right. Well, like, no, we from the start, we called that loud person table and it was true to the end.
Yeah.
What's up?
But I guess just like for me, I was able to put a lot of trust in you that even though we were going to digress a lot and we were going to come up with a lot of stupid little jokes and we were going to have callbacks and all that stuff, I knew that I could trust you all to want to get somewhere with it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I never had to worry that somebody was just going to go off and just do something and, like, they were just going to, like, leave the plot, essentially.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I knew that you all were going to stick with me.
Well, I don't know. Zach kind of did that in the cake
finale.
Well, okay. I will explain later why I did that.
Okay.
But yes, go ahead.
Is that going to be in the behind the scenes when we get there?
I think.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Anybody else got any stars?
So, yeah, I just my star is just that I love that I can trust you all to do funny shit and also get stuff done.
I'll give a star to Nova also. To Emma. Her name is Emma. She plays Nova on TV.
I'm not a Nova. I just play one on TV.
Was it Nova 69?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nova 69.
Oh, my fucking God. I don't know. Just all of your interactions I felt like were so funny. Especially, I was trying to re-listen to the show, but I only got through like half of episode two. But like when you're reacting to Rodney having a pension, it's just, oh my God, the salt is real. It's so funny.
Yes.
Thanks.
Rodney's union.
Okay. So we might explore this a little bit more in behind the scenes, but a star as well, just to that whole scene and how you all handled it, but particularly Zach, you monster, I love you. because they knew going into it that I was going to black hole swan them. Like they were letting me do my build up for it.
Black hole swan was the only thing we knew going into this.
They knew that they were going to start off with essentially like a performance or a retro, like a little review of what had just happened with that. We knew that we were going to sort of drop into the fiction that way. We're going to introduce the characters that way. That's how much we talked about ahead of time. Zach just like as Lenny just suddenly acting coy and then being like, I'm sorry for pushing Rodney out the airlock. That was not planned.
No,
I did not know people would say that.
And it was beautiful.
It was a good time.
It just resulted in this immediate pivot in the conversation. And it was so funny.
Emma brought it up in game, but Lenny had a fucking arc with coping with Rodney's death.
Yeah. Ending mm-hmm. having Lenny have the final line, I want to raise, and having Lenny start so like fresh-faced, bushy-eyed, or whatever the fuck is there.
Bushy-tailed, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed.
Yes.
Bright-tailed, bushy-eyed.
Yeah. Anyway.
Bright glass and gleaming concrete.
Yes. So having him start off that way and like just be so like, what's a union in the beginning? To then like, Yarmouth arrives and he's just like, I want a raise.
So good. And literally going through a metamorphosis.
Yes.
Yeah.
In that time as well. Which
Yeah.
Maybe that was the attitude change.
Yeah.
Maybe anyway, we'll get into it. I don't know.
So we've talked a lot about things we liked. We're going to talk about that probably a little bit more in the behind the scenes. We can't linger forever on stars because we have a timeline to keep to. Let's talk about wishes real quick. With wishes, we usually only do one, or you can sort of have like a little nested list there. But like generally, what's one thing you would like to see next for your character or next for the story, or just like if you were to do more of this, what you would want to do? Does anybody have anything they'd like to start with? I've got one, actually.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really want to explore more what happens with Nova and her position mm-hmm. in the ship.
Because she threw like half a mutiny.
Yeah, there's essentially a coup that happens. And originally when Emma and I were talking going into finally recording the finale, I had much more concrete ideas in mind for how that would end. But then we didn't really get there. We got to a different place to end on. And so like if I were to do more of this, I would like further explore Nova's relationship to the Cosmic Library and specifically to this crew on this ship. Like, does the captain stay in power? Is he a figurehead or does he actually get ousted in some way or another?
Oh like, my God, what if he turned into a literal figurehead?
That'd be funny. If he gets turned to stone in the next episode, that'd be fun.
Shit.
What if he turned into an Easter Island head? Because that would match the voice.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, I was thinking about this a little bit. I do wish that we'd managed to like cement that a little bit mm-hmm. better. Something that I thought of in the aftermath was like when she's leaning against the chair and we're like trying to figure out how to sort of put that together. We could have just had the chair like expand, or like everything on this ship is fucking bonkers and completely off the rails anyway. There's no reason why this chair that was originally meant for a starfish couldn't just decide, okay, Nova's the new captain, and like it would have been a good way to like
loved that.
That would be cool.
But none of us thought about it at the time, which is fine.
Okay, that's my wish.
Oh, I do love the idea of, like, in the next thing, if Nova now is in charge, just, like, having, like, they put in a new captain's chair next to the old one. And the old one, they just sort of just, like, cut off the top. And there's just still this pole sticking up.
If Nova gets promoted to captain, does Rodney become pilot?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
That's the thing. Like, that's what
my roles weren't very good.
That's what I was going to get to at the end. It's like, Rodney now has piloting experience. This is absolutely the kind of institution that like, oh, you can kind of do this. That's your job now. So like, yeah, I had ideas, but we didn't really get there.
Nova took a class at some point where they taught her to always be training her replacement. And so she trained Rodney.
ABT, always be training.
That's right.
ABT.
Any other wishes? Let's go around.
Honestly, I got to do everything I wanted.
Same.
I was an unrestrained, lusty blob, and it was the time of my life.
I want a sticker that says unrestrained, lusty blob.
Hot, unrestrained, lusty blob.
Yes.
I'll talk about this more in the behind the scenes, but I didn't actually intend for Froctorog to be a horny character.
And kind of just happened.
And then I did not fuck the void.
I don't think Frockdrog ended up being that horny of a character.
I mean, I guess
less horny, more sexy.
Yeah.
Sure.
They cannot help their natural sex appeal.
That's true. It's actually unnatural.
You're right. They're unnatural.
True.
Because unnatural appeal is the move.
You're right.
Thank you for explaining the joke for the audience.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they didn't just finish binging it. Maybe it's been 2 weeks since the end and they need a refresher.
Yeah. Zach, you were starting to say something. What'd you got?
Yeah. So I'll just kind of build on what Emma. Words? What are words?
I am Lena now.
Welcome.
You are. Congratulations. I'll build on what Emma said. I would love to see all these characters develop more. Mm-hmm. And I realized that doesn't jive well with the one and done kind of setup. So yeah. I would love to see a campaign with these characters. But that's my wish.
Anything you want to say, Pat?
I think I'm kind of on board with Zach. I would like to see a campaign with these characters, but at the same time, please, God, no.
See, I definitely have the please, God, no vibes because I had to edit it. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
Oh, no. Like an off recording. Yeah, yeah.
No, I Stars and Wishes, the wishes aren't necessarily things we will ever fulfill, but it's just sort of to...
Oh, yeah.
It could be fun, like an off recording campaign, though. But
I mean, I'm almost done wrapping up my 3-year D&D campaign. So
something we record and then we don't like particularly edit or anything, and then we just like release on Patreon or something. No promises. Mm-hmm. No promises.
No promises.
No promises.
But we'll think about it. Okay, so that's our stars and wishes. Let's go behind the scenes a little bit. Let's talk about things that didn't even necessarily make it to the bloopers, or just sort of like off mic some rationales. What do people got?
Well, I mean, you know, let me try again.
Okay. Take all the time you need.
We're on a schedule.
That's not true. Do not do that.
A schedule.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I think you mentioned...
No, that's okay. You can call me Keeper. You can
welcome the word.
Easier for
welcome
you.
Do you want to be Lena?
I could be Lena.
I don't know what's wrong with me. I've lost my ability to speak coherently.
Wait, is that's a new development?
Hello, Alex.
You gotta be so mean.
There's the gel scream we all know and love.
Yeah, right into the mic too.
Hot take, the reason that Gel played Frockdrog is because the gives her time to think.
I mean, honestly, do whatever works.
Oh my goodness. No, so David, you mentioned in the Cast Junkie server, I think, mm-hmm. How we, before we actually recorded the finale, we all kind of sat at the table and talked about what we wanted to happen in that finale.
Yeah.
Like, you know, different things we wanted to hit. And I said... Well, I haven't done anything with the fact that Frockdrog is the ship's gardener, and I really wanted to bring that in somehow. I did not plan for, like, you know, plant consciousness transference, but...
Who does, really?
Who plants? Who chooses?
But, doing something with plants was on my radar, and it came to me... I'm sorry.
It assembled for you.
It is the plot assembled in my brain.
Yeah.
What?
If Marvel would like to sponsor us,
I can't tell you the exact moment that it assembled in my brain because I didn't make it to the end in my re-listen. But it was like moments before I said it. So
it certainly sounded when you presented the idea that you had a fresh, hot thought that you were ready to put out there. So.
It was a fresh, hot, lusty blob thought.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lusty thought.
Lusty thoughts.
Yeah, there's...
In your area.
Like we said, hot, lusty thoughts in your area. anyway, we talked a little bit about how there was sort of a an unrealized alternate ending. And that's because we sort of got to a point where things were going a particular way with the information and the tools that we had at our disposal. And I wasn't like super hot on how it was going, but I wanted to be a good improv person and I was going along with it, but everybody could tell that I wasn't super happy with it. And so that's one of the reasons why we stopped. And like, I don't know.
I mean, all the reasons that you said made sense. Like, yeah. It wasn't, it wasn't a perfect ending. Not that the ending we did do was perfect. That's not what I'm arguing. I'm not arguing that we were able to end it perfectly, but rather that, like, you made very good points about, like, I mean, I was just vibing at the time. And so, like, I mean, I had
some part of my story sense kicked in and went, hey, wait, no, we can do this better. Mm-hmm. And I do think what we ended up with was better. Not perfect still, of course, because I don't think that anything we ever do is really perfect.
Yeah.
But I do think that everybody got mostly what they wanted out of it.
Right.
Yeah, I do think, I mean, with this whole podcast in general, this is actually a deep behind the seats cut. But like, better done than perfect is a really important thing to me. And when I started this show, it was to learn a lot, both about the systems we play, to be able to have those different experiences making these stories. But then also like from the editing angle to like learn how to do it, to be able to improve at it and not have the risk then of saying like, yeah, I know we've been doing this campaign for a year and a half now, but like you do need the early episodes, but they aren't edited as well. And like, blah, blah. So it's like, well, if we do something episodic, then like, it doesn't matter. You can just drop, like, tons of people have just dropped in for our Brindlewood Bay game now that Kickstarter's going. Like, they're just like, oh, cool. Like, there's an actual play of this game. I'm gonna go listen to it. Right. And they don't have to listen to our old stuff to like enjoy our show. Right. And so like, that was a big thing for me, was like, I want to make something that does not have to be perfect. I want to make something where each time I have the fresh opportunity to innovate and learn and make mistakes and have that not be the end of the show.
Right.
Right. So that's like sort of a kind of a deep cut on that subject. But yeah, if you want to know more about the alt ending, I'm sure Pat will edit it and get it up on the Patreon eventually.
Yeah, I got to edit the bloops for episode 6 and 7 first.
I thought 6 was like just what happened.
We're
on just 7 now.
Are we on 7 now?
You should know. You're the bloop god.
Yeah, I still handle the uploading though, so.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah. Anyway.
I guess it is 7.
Yeah. Anything else behind the scenes? I do want to get to some of these hot listener questions.
I mentioned it before, but this is the most amount of recording sessions we've had to do for a show thus far, with it being 6. Mm-hmm. Including this one.
Yeah, I think our next closest was Brindlewood Bay, maybe?
Probably.
I think Brindlewood Bay we did in 4.
Undying had a few as well.
Yeah, it's because Undying, everybody was not feeling great the first day of recording. We had to abandon ship.
Well, Undying was like, you recorded half of it, and then you guys played all of
Ghost Lines
and then recorded the second half of it.
Yeah, a month and a half later. Yeah.
See, we don't need to record an Undying post-apocalypse because we'll just slowly talk about it.
Trickle it into every other show.
It's the hidden post-apocalypse within the other post-apocalypse.
Oh, my God.
Go ahead.
I did have one other thing, just because, like, I did not intend for Proctor Ogg to be, like, a sexual character in any way. like the whole lusty blob thing was just entirely meant to be a joke about him having a lust for knowledge.
Yeah.
It was, but I don't know. I feel like, Emma, I feel like you, especially in when we're in games together, you always end up like pushing my characters to be like in sexual situations.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to do that.
No, it's, I mean, you did it with Azazel.
That's true.
Not that anyone listening will have any idea who that is. And other characters.
You were playing a bard, though. It was going to happen.
In The Watch, you two had a sort of romantic.
Okay, no, but Pasak was absolutely intended to be horny as hell.
Oh, yeah.
there was a draft of Rodney where he was supposed to have like a Minnesotan accent.
Oh, I remember you talking? You're doing like a Northern Canadian thing?
Well,
no, I don't know.
It was still going to be U.S. because...
New England. That's what you said, right?
No.
No? I don't remember.
No, maybe New England, but not England.
No, New England is what...
So I think you started with maybe doing Minnesota. Then you're like, I'm going to go something New England.
Yeah, and,
like,
and then I just ended up using my regular voice.
Yeah.
That's how he keeps us on our toes.
Not because I chickened out on it. I just didn't... Like last second, Rodney was about to speak for the first time, and I was all like, I don't think it's right for the character, and I just...
That's fair.
...went with my real voice. But yeah, I think it would have added another layer of funny, but we already had somebody doing a funny accent.
That's true.
So...
Also, Fractorog was originally going to be genderless. Was just going to use they, them pronouns. And then you can hear the moment where I decide to use he, him for that character instead in the setup. Yeah. Because like, I don't know. I just started doing that and I'm like, all right, let's do that.
But basically the idea behind the Minnesotan or like, New England accent was the draft idea was that Rodney was going to give off like big middle-aged dad vibes.
Oh, I love that.
When I think of those two accents, I associate it with like middle-aged dad.
Mm. Fair.
So,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Anything behind the scenes you want to mention, Zach?
Yeah. I'll be real quick.
Yeah.
This may be super apparent to some listeners, but this is my second game of D&D ever.
A TTRPG. Yeah. D&D is a specific one.
TTRPG. Yeah. If that wasn't made more evident by my characterization of that comment. So, very new to like tabletop game stuff. And it was a lot of fun. It was really cool. I quickly realized that I accidentally made Linny kind of like Jell talked about with Proctor Og. I made Linny way too powerful. Like the toolbox that could fix anything and the knife that could turn anything. Yeah, and an object into cake. Like that's just way too powerful.
I don't know.
Like it worked for the bit. Like it was was great. But I don't regret it at all. But that's part of what made what became our alternate ending really difficult, because Linny ended up kind of flexing too much of that power. And when we came up to this new ending, I really wanted to separate Linny out from the situation because I knew that could get, there wasn't really a spot for him in that moment that wasn't like exercising one of those two like stupid powers. So not stupid as in bad, as in like
stupid
over the top powers.
Yeah.
Over the top powers. And so it also gave him the opportunity to go through what Pat mentioned earlier, a literal metamorphosis, which helped develop his character.
So
more. And so,
Are you saying that the reason you went off to Cake Land was specifically so that you wouldn't be OP-ifying the ending?
Well, I knew that Linny's OP nature was central to a lot of the breakdown of the original ending.
Okay.
And I didn't want that to end up throwing a wrench in anything else. Yeah. And I really wanted other characters to shine in that moment. Not that Linny isn't a good character, but that it needed to, like, he needed to be in a different spot at that time.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, I think it worked pretty well, kind of separating him.
Yeah, I mean, moment. I think it all worked out.
Yeah.
There's a very careful balance that kind of has to happen with any TTRPG, but I think is especially... Mm-hmm. Sometimes especially noticeable with Monster of the Week because of the ways in which the genre really puts character development and character stuff very front and center, where you really do have to find a way to balance everybody getting their moment to develop and shine, finding ways to do that together, but also like not everything is going to happen with the group together.
Yep.
So like there's of course the old adage of like never split the party or don't split the party. But I think that that is less true.
This party got real split.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for Monster of the Week, that's very much the case of like it's a cooperative game. It's a collaborative game. But mm-hmm. also everybody really does have their own role. And often they're going to be doing their own thing.
Yeah.
And that's something that like you've got to figure out how to balance, especially in a situation where like. Mm-hmm. You want the character interaction, especially quote unquote on screen, with everybody actually getting to interact with everybody else. I think I think David especially did a good job of balancing that.
Yeah, I tried to balance mm-hmm. screen time as best I could. There were times there are episodes where some characters don't really feature at all, but then like in the next episode, usually they're like the main character of that episode because like that's just mm-hmm. kind of how the recording went.
Right.
Trying to give and take yeah. as long as we kept advancing forward a little bit.
And I, even though we were in our separate places, it was, I feel like not that hard for us to like come together and like be cross participating mm-hmm. with everything because we had comms and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I really love how in Adventure Zone's Monster of the Week, Amnesty, like they use the fact that it's a cell phone dead zone where they are in order to make it so they don't have the convenience of like communication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think for our setting, it worked really well for us to have instant communication.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for saying Amnesty. I've been trying to think of the name of that arc.
Oh my God.
For like a week. I haven't looked it up because every time I think of it, it's just like a fleeting thing.
Also McElroy's if you'd like to sponsor us.
That would be the weirdest.
That would be so weird.
Partnership. No. But one thing I did want to mention real quick before we hop off this topic and move on to listener questions. Or actually, sorry, we still have to talk about Rodney.
Yeah.
We'll do Rodney next. But before we get
don't
there,
talk about Rodney.
We've talked a little bit about power scaling in this. And the one thing I want to be clear on and why I didn't find any of that to really be a problem in this game is comedy has a totally different power scaling than a serious story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's fair.
That is why, no matter what, if you take like your strongest non-gag related show, like overpowered protagonist, and you pit them up against any gag show protagonist, you pit any of them against fucking Tom from Tom and Jerry, mm-hmm. Tom will win. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. he has the power of comedy on his side. He has the power of comedic immortality.
Yeah.
No, like, you're so right.
Mm-hmm. He's got the power of God and comedy.
Rodney is Tom.
Yes, Rodney is Tom. Really, that's underneath it all, it's that Rodney is a furry version Tom. And, you know, he's just... Anyway, we're talking about Rodney now. Let's get into that. I now have my crackpot theory. Rodney's a furry. There's my theory. Bam.
Rodney's a furry.
And
it doesn't explain anything.
Everyone knows that furries can die and come back to life.
Specifically, he's like furry model Tom. Like he's a that kind of, yeah. He's specifically a Tom furry from Tom and Jerry, the cat. For anyone who hasn't seen Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, Tom Cat.
Yeah, Tom Cat. Anyway, Pat, this section is mostly on you. I will say we're going to go over time.
Oh, yeah. We're so over.
So I want you to.
Oh, no.
Let's dig into it.
Who could ever have seen that?
Quick, let's go.
Right.
Thanks, Zach. Thank you for your vote of confidence.
So I had a couple of people respond on the Discord with their theories of Rodney. And I really like both of the theories that I got. I think they're really enjoyable and really creative, much more creative than my own personal theory for them. But let's get into it. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Scredly the Ogre. He's submitted questions before mm-hmm. for our postmortem stuff. But his theory was, Rodney was at PU with Nova and the Froctor, but neither of them knew who he was since he was just a lowly sanitation engineer. Og noticed Rodney so little that he didn't even notice that Rodney was in the room when Og tried out his space-yeeting device. Og was then joined with the Void and yeeted through Rodney, which bonded their physical forms along with a small piece of the Void. And then he goes on to say that his other thought was that Rodney is just connected to the toolbox that Lenny has, and the toolbox keeps bringing Rodney back.
It keeps fixing him.
Yeah,
Rodney. I love that.
Either that or none of the tools in the toolbox can like break or can fall apart or anything like
he's
that.
Just
and he's just a tool in the toolbox.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I like that.
What was the other one you got?
Oh, I almost forgot, as part of the first part, the result is that when Rodney dies, the void bit erases Rodney's memories and his body is renewed by the extra dimensional second body that was the Froctor's. Which means I feel like this means that Rodney has limited immortality, but who knows? But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Gredly. The other theory I got was from our longstanding patron over on Patreon, Morshadi.
Shout out to Morshadi. We love you.
Shout out, Morshadi. Morshadi's theory was Rodney is part of the ship because he is part of the Union.
Hey.
Yeah. When you are part of the Union, you become part of the collection. No matter what, Rodney always exists. If he dies, he respawns. The reason he can't remember that he died in episode one is because the ship has their autosave on default. The reason not Kermit kept telling, I love that, Yarmouth. Not Kermit.
Not Kermit.
The reason not Kermit keeps telling the rest of the crew not to worry about the Union is that he has no real authority over Rodney or anyone in the Union.
And
that annoys and slightly frightens them, an unknown quantity.
I love that.
I love that a lot.
Glorious.
I love both of those theories.
Both of those theories are better than my own personal theory on it. But real quick, do any of you have theories on why Rodney is the way
he is? I already submitted mine. Rodney's a furry. There's my answer.
Okay.
Rodney's a furry.
That's...
I do like the idea of Rodney being... I think it's something that David and I talked about a little bit a long time ago when we were kind of finding different ways to like do this game, and we knew that Pat wanted to play a character who died and came back.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about like having a sort of weird reality warping drive a la Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And like all of the characters in one way or another being kind of tied to it. But like Rodney being especially tied to it. So I've always thought of it as Rodney being very tied to the ship, and being the ship's custodian. Because
so similar to Morshadi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like Rodney is another interpretation of that I'd sort of thought of was, so I guess I do have two theories, is that Rodney, every time he dies, he's replaced with a Rodney from a different universe where Rodney didn't go down the path that caused him to die. And so he's just like hot swapped between different Rodneys.
Oh, I love that.
Whoa.
I like that too.
Joe, you got that.
Nice.
I literally have put zero brain cells into considering
Rodney just is.
Why Rodney is the way he is. I like every time
Rodney be like that.
Every time I start thinking about why is Rodney that way, my brain just goes, he just is.
just is.
I do really also like the idea of Rodney being in the room the whole time and Proctor Ogg accidentally like
doing a yeet
through him, especially because then the idea of Proctor Ogg looking at him going, why is Rodney the way he is?
Same and, like, way
that's
you like, are.
Even funnier. Yeah. But no, I mean, also like from a Proctor Ogg perspective, Proctor Ogg dissected Rodney and didn't find anything out of the ordinary, which means he's just like that.
Yeah.
Or because it was Proctor Ogg doing the dissecting and Proctor Ogg already does his, like already has his own weird shit. Maybe he was unable to see the weirdness of Rodney because it was like his own weirdness.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Like the opposite of Spidey sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, in
In Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah. When they meet each other,
yeah,
they instantly, their spidey sense tells them, oh, you're also Spider-Man.
Yeah. You're right. So it's the anti-spider sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I get you.
He's totally normal to you because he is like you.
Right.
So, Zach, do you have any theory on it?
So I had not given it thought before this very moment, but I have an idea.
Excellent.
I have an idea.
Improv is our skill.
Yeah, right. So y'all know that, like, Lenny thinks that Rodney has special purpose. I think that Rodney is space Jesus. And this means that
Zach,
we started
you have
this game.
No idea how close we are to my headcanon.
We started the game by killing God. I look forward to your letters.
You almost made Pat do a spit take.
I almost spat out my water.
Or spatty if you're nasty.
Or spatty if you're nasty.
Spatty! Oh, how long do I wait before I change my name in the Discord to Spatty?
Till after this episode comes out, at least. Anyway, so Pat, let's hear it. Let's get your headcanon.
So, Zach, you were close.
Yay.
Yeah.
Do I get a prize?
My sort of headcanon on it was...
The prize is that COVID doesn't kill you.
Yeah, you're surprised that COVID doesn't kill you.
Yay.
My sort of headcanon on it has sort of always been since Zach, when you chose Lenny's history with him to be that he thought that he was or he learned that Rodney was important. I kind of built the whole thing off of that. And I think Rodney is secretly a chosen playbook.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some distant planet out there that has some kind of like prophecy about Rodney. They just have, but because of how distant the planet is, they just haven't gotten the messenger to him yet. And so he hasn't had a chance to be the chosen yet. And so Matt Smith's regeneration in Doctor Who, like they have to like send like regeneration power through the void to Rodney to revive him because he hasn't had the chance to fulfill the prophecy yet.
That would be fun, too, because there's the chosen, like, the chosen thing is that the move that they get for free is that every time they're in a situation where they would die, they have to use a luck point to come back, which means that, like, finding that out eventually would mean that you probably would just be out of luck points.
Yeah.
Oh, no! Yeah.
I just like the idea of, like, some, like, alien race somewhere distant watching Rodney's progress and just every time he dies, just go, son of a bitch. All right. Send him the regeneration juice.
I love that.
But another thing that plays into that theory of why I think it is that way is... when me and David were workshopping the Red Shirt Requiem move, we never said it in the setup, but the idea behind it was always kind of, it's a one-off per mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he were to come back after being revived and he keeps his health where it was at, and so if he takes more harm to the point of death, then he would actually die.
Oh,
and then I would like Apocalypse World shift playbooks to the Chosen. And yeah.
Hmm.
But that's always kind of been my headcanon on why Rodney is the way he is.
I love that. You say that that's not as fun or creative as our wonderful listener suggestions, but I really like that.
I like all of those.
Yeah. I think all, I mean,
yeah.
Part of the fun of Rodney is the fact that. We don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
That's like the best part about not playing anymore is like whatever you think Rodney be, Rodney be.
Rodney be.
The Rodney abides.
The Rodney abides.
So, speaking of our wonderful listeners, we do have some wonderfully submitted listener questions that I think it's time to start hitting because we're already over time and we just need to speed roll these games. So, let's start off. I got a list here. I want to start with one that's from More Shoddy, our lovely patron and wonderful.
Shout out to More Shoddy.
More Shoddy.
On Discord, Twitter, and Patreon. And the question was this. There's a little bit of framework to this. So I'm going to read this first. So, Monster of the Week is one of my favorite
Try again.
Monster of the Week is one of my favorite PBTA games because it's so approachable to pretty much everyone. Everyone has experience with some of the media touchstones, which leads to my question. Because of how open the game can be, players can run away, essentially, with the retconning, non-sequiturs, piping up with lots of quotes and input, which is great, but it can also lead to derailing of the game. We've definitely talked about that some. So to players, is this kind of playstyle preferable, and would you rather play longer improv-y games or games with a more singular focus that lends to a four-episode arc? And the same question for me, but sort of answering them in, from different approaches.
I'm just happy to be here.
Gel just vibes.
I don't know. I'm thinking about, do I have a preference?
I will play anything you put in front of me.
Right. That's kind of how I feel.
I think for just playing because we have fun, just fucking shooting the shit and doing every stupid joke under the book and like making up random bullshit altogether, I think is very, very fun. I also think there is something to be said as well for like having a very focused story. And I think that can be really fun too. But I think like we all really enjoy each other's humor and creativity and all of that. So it can be very fun to just let that run. All that said, for the actually being part of a show, I think that was really fun for this arc. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's every probability that all of that will happen in the future with some other games, considering we started to see like that happen with Ghostlines especially, and a little bit in Apocalypse World even, I would say, just because like we do all spend time together and we enjoy each other's company.
Mm-hmm.
And so that comes out in the games. I do think having stuff be a little bit more focused for the podcast is probably better.
Yeah.
What do you think, Zach?
For a podcast, I think having some more focused mm-hmm. settings can be really useful. And I think that definitely puts less pressure on you, but I have way more fun when it's just kind of
amen.
Bullshitting it all the way through. And yeah. I really enjoyed the kind of fly by the seat of our pants kind of approach that we took to this. I wouldn't have wanted to do it any other way.
Yeah.
I am really interested to see the experience of what being a player is like in a more structured game. So I'm amenable to new opportunities and styles.
Admittedly, the other game that you've played in that I've run was a very loose D&D campaign
has been running for 2 years.
Well, we've been on hiatus for a lot of that, but
for another 2 years.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think we played for 2 years and then we've been paused for another two.
God, did we play for 2 years on that one before we had to go to hiatus?
So. We were in the third floor for like a year.
True. Okay, yeah. It's like a tower climbing thing. I won't dig into the details, but it gets wild. Okay. That's fair. All right. So let me think about this a little bit. I think from a podcast perspective, a tighter structure, we do one shots. We have to get to the end of our story and have it be some kind of satisfying. Yeah. That is a requirement for the show. And the more improv-y we allow ourselves to be, the harder that can be to accomplish. But that's where like a lot of the player trust comes in, because I would say with The Watch as an example, that's a serious game. And I did not know exactly where we were going to go. I had like a kind of a forking path in mind. And I had different like adversaries that you could deal with depending on which way you forked.
Right.
Like that game, I think, comes to a very, very good, solid ending.
Yeah.
And that was improvised, like all like to the very end. And so I think those both can be achieved. I think the main thing for me is that the amount of digressions we do in this one, because we're just so giggly, from an editing perspective,
it's rough.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It adds time in the first pass. But more than that, even like, I want to do more sci-fi shit. It's a lot of fun. But when you get to like the sound effect and music work for the sci-fi
pew,
shit,
pew, like,
God, it's so much. There's so much of it. And so like, I don't want to go back to space anytime soon. It's too much work. I do want to go back to space, but I don't want to do it soon.
Yeah, that's fair. That's valid.
Give me a minute doing less work for a little while, and then we can come back to this. It's just been like this editing. This one has been a bit of a slog. Yeah. So not that, again, I love it. I love what we've produced. I loved playing it with you all. Like, it was so much fun. But the production end of it has been,
I can imagine,
a 6-month thorn in my side.
For sure.
Thorn.
Oh yeah, it was thorny. Okay, so that's my answer to that. So let's talk about some more questions. We're going to do some of these kind of rapid fire because I think they have answers we've either already talked about or they can be answered fairly briefly. So again, brevity in mind. From Scredly the Ogre on Discord and I think also on Twitter. How did Lenny's toolbox work? I know we established.
No one knows.
Certainly not Lenny.
It is an enigma. No one knows.
I know we talked about that they were the Froctor's tool originally that got, you know, also just like Void Yote.
Yeah.
I don't know. The weird stuff happens in space, y'all.
They're magic.
Yeah, I don't know. It's magic. Sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic and all that.
Honestly?
What?
I don't know. I was just expecting you to say a sufficiently advanced magic is indistinguishable from technology. Like you did in the... I'm sorry. I did like look straight at you, didn't
what,
I?
Yeah. You mean what is... magic, but technology we don't understand.
That's right. That's what it was.
Scredly's next question is about how, like, what was Rodney's whole deal? I think we thoroughly answered that. So we can move past that. Question number three from them. Just how many of the crew actually did fuck the swan?
Oh, boy.
I mean, Rodney is out because he was a corpse.
Yeah. I think we retconned it as, and I was mad about it.
You were so mad at
the crew.
I think it was everyone except Rodney.
I think that we made that joke, but to be honest, I think it was probably just Froctor.
I did not. I mean, okay, when I said I did not fuck the void.
No. Say the thing. Say the thing.
I did not fuck the void.
There it is. She said the thing.
All right. I'll say the thing. No, but, I was at the time that I said that. Trying to be candid about, like, I'm not trying to like make an excuse.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't trying to be like coy and be like, I totally didn't fuck the void. And then I realized it'd be funnier if I did.
How about salmon? How about salmon? Were you trying to be salmon?
Koi fish versus
okay.
No, it wasn't a good joke.
I love it, but what I want you
David, none of them are good.
What I want you to know is that I was thinking the word koi the way like it is spelled the way I said it, so C-O-Y.
Yeah.
So I was like, is he making a play on cod?
No.
Because like that's
I was making a play on koi.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. okay. So I think the answer is unknown.
Yeah.
Unconfirmed.
I'm going to... Allegedly. They're going to hate if all of these answers are unknown.
The answer's not unknown. It's allegedly.
Yes.
Allegedly. Well, the entire crew minus Rod, allegedly.
Yes.
Allegedly. So, okay.
I think we need to make a distinction between how many did and how many would.
Oh, fuck. I forgot about the next question from Scudley. Did the good Froctor take the name Og because the void kept saying, oh God, when he fucked it?
Congratulations, Scredly. You blue screened gel.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It wasn't my headcanon before, but it is now.
No, his name was Og before he void yeeted.
That's true.
So,
well, that's just, listen, time is not a straight line. It is a wibbly wobbly.
Timey wimey.
Yeah.
I mean,
ball of stuff.
Sure. Events in the future can influence the past. Perhaps Proctorhog's original species, whatever, from whatever planet he's from. Because I never actually like established what his original, like, you know, alien race was, other than he was something humanoidish.
I do think there's an easy answer to this.
Yes.
And that's, you wanted his name to be Frog.
Yes.
And so his name is Og, because Froctor plus two letters, O-G, make Frog.
Okay, that is why his name is Og.
But in world.
Yes, in the real life, in this universe, in that universe where I played Froctor Og on TV, I was going to say something, but my brain is just been completely derailed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, okay, no, it's fine. I did also want to say, though, with Froctorog, I should have said this behind the scenes. This is actually something I don't think I've told any of you. But just like, I imagine Froctorog's like, oh yeah, no, I remember where I was going. So like, maybe his parents, if he has, you know, parents, named him Og based on his a prophecy of the future where they saw him fuck the void.
Yeah, there we go.
The void said, like, oh God, oh God.
And they didn't know like what was happening even necessarily, because I don't feel like fucking the void necessarily looks like what one would consider to be
intercourse. Maybe it's because he's an original gangster.
Maybe it's because he's an original gangster.
But no, I imagine his humanoid form. I imagine him just being like a short little nerd in khakis and a tucked in shirt, a pocket protector, and like a really bad haircut. I just like just imagine some guy you knew in grad school who looked like that. And that's what Froctor Og looked like before he got void yeeted.
Okay. So then
I got a question Nova's taste at this particular moment.
But we were. Oh, I guess we did decide that we had fucked. I don't know. Maybe she was just desperate.
I mean, it's college. Everybody experiments.
You try sometimes.
Speaking of Nova, do half Martian, half Canadians celebrate Boxing Day is another question.
So who asked that?
That is my favorite question.
Oh, my God.
They celebrate MMA Fighter Day.
Boxing!
Which, of course, is not what Boxing Day is about, but that's fine.
Another question was for me. David, was there a number of times you had planned to kill Rodney during the game? Same question for Pat.
69,
Once.
Yeah, it was just
we
once.
We planned on just once and come back.
I feel like if we'd done it more than once, it would have taken over too much of the story.
I think that it should have been
22.22. No, as I stated before, we didn't mention it in the setup episode, but like it's a one-off per mystery.
Yeah.
And Lenny saying that he pushed Rodney out the airlock, the black hole swan was a separate mystery. That was like the tail end of one mystery.
Yeah.
So.
So those were Squidly's questions, which we sort of answered.
I mostly answer.
Now we've got some questions from Natalie of the Storyteller Squad and also on the Cast Junkie Discord. But the Storyteller Squad is a show we shouted out earlier this arc. So
hi, Natalie.
To them if you haven't already. Here are the questions from Natalie. They're fun. The first one is, did Nova always have a thing for massive metallic titans? Or was there something about the titan's consciousness that was just intrinsically attractive? How did that translate once the same entity inhabited a much smaller vegetation-based physical form?
I have an answer for this.
Oh my God, you do?
Yeah. No, it's actually, I when listening back through, because I was worried that the shift from Nova being very, like, quote-unquote serious about her job and about what she was doing to just being horny on main was going to be trying too much. But actually, within the context of the episode, we actually establish that because she is connected to the greater consciousness, and because there's like that two-way street of like information sharing, the fact that the Titan wants this unity of all of his bits to come together, like, absolutely also affects Nova, and like the fact that he is lonely and looking for that like that interaction and that I'm looking for that assembly, I guess.
Yes,
that's such a better answer than I thought you were gonna say. I thought you were gonna say she was trying to bang the stress away.
I think she was also trying to make this stressful.
I think maybe like while connected with the mind, that was sort of like what drove you.
Yeah.
But then like once you were separated from it, once the consciousness download had completed, maybe then it was just like, wow, that was a really stressful experience. You want to bang it out.
Well, and then like they've got that trauma bond and like
you want to bang about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Who cool. doesn't want to sleep with the Everglady?
Orn.
So,
it's also
question.
One of the few chances I've gotten to flirt with my husband on mic. So
that's true.
It's true.
Was there ever a version of the story where Lenny emerged fully as a butterfly with a long proboscis and a taste for blood?
Oh my God.
Question
I
for
love
Zach
that.
From Natalie.
that was not in the story, but I love that. Perhaps there is a future version of him that does this. We will see.
We've only seen the first metamorphosis.
He's going to go through a second.
Vampire.
What if he just goes through? What if he just goes through these endless metamorphoses and like can change into all kinds of forms?
Thirstier every
anytime
time.
That he gains some new understanding, he has to go through a metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm. I think at that point you have to take the monstrous playbook.
And there. each time he moves farther left on the political spectrum.
excellent.
Oh, Zach, I love you.
Okay, next question was from Natalie. There's a collection of them. Was the captain's voice a play on James Tiberius Kirk or Patrick Warburton? And my answer to that is both.
Yes.
The voice was inspired by Patrick Warburton, or specifically our friend, their already their imagining of a Patrick Warburton impression, kind of like a chronic sort of impression as well.
Yeah.
Which is Patrick Warburton, but like a specific voice from him. And so it's that rendition then through the lens of me comes out sort of like that. And then I played into it a little bit of another voice that I have for this mayor character from a skit thing that I did a long time ago. So that's where sort of the voice came from. And the cadence, though, and like the things that he did were very inspired by James Tiberius Kirk with like the captain's logs and stuff like that.
That's four levels of bastardization.
Yes. So
I can't believe that you would expect anything less from this art.
We can make more bastards here on this show.
Bastards upon bastards.
So yes, the answer to that is yes. Both is good. Both is good. Next question was, at what point did you all realize your finale was going to become a comprehensive booty call joke?
I know when the moment I knew.
Yeah.
The moment was when Emma decided to actually say, "You up?"
Yep. Yeah, same. Same for me.
That was it.
You up? Oh, when, this is going to be booty.
It's when David challenged me to really decide what it was I was saying.
Right.
And the joke had already been made, and I couldn't think of anything funnier. And I also knew that if I were to back down from that, I would be a fucking coward.
Hell yeah. Commit to the bit.
Kiss for comedy.
That's right.
The moment I knew was when I saw the look in Emma's eyes when she looked back up at me after looking down when I asked that question, like what she actually says. And like she went to open her mouth and I was just like, oh, this is what we're doing now.
I pushed this game to be even hornier than we were expecting. And I'm all right with that. We started with fucking the void and we just went from there.
Yeah. Yeah. We started with fucking the void and now we're here. That's all the listener questions that we had that were submitted. The only additional one I had was that Jell threw in offhand. That was, did Froctor really fuck the void? Which I feel like you kind of already
answered. We did answer that question.
Yeah.
To the best of our ability.
Yes, to the best of our ability. So now that we've finished all of our listener questions, I just wanted to thank you, our listener, for dealing with our shit this entire show.
dealing with the shit room.
That's right.
Oh my God, the shit room.
God, scar for the shit room. Just as a the evolution of that joke, it just got worse. I loved it.
In the heart of the chest.
The bowels.
The bowels.
Star for Jell with the 22.22.22.
Oh, yeah.
I literally
I'm so I just wanted to two things. One, I just wanted to say thank you for joining us on this journey. It's been a delight to record this. Thank you to all of my wonderful players for being my friends and for just being hilarious in this game. It was a lot of fun. And then just to you, the listener, I want to let you know that the next game we're playing is Pig Smoke. Pig Smoke is about magical academics dealing with a unyielding and awful bureaucracy and just trying to make tenure. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're actually going to be recording the setup for that right after this. So if my voice starts to go, you know why.
It's also because Jell drank all his throat goat.
I only drank one cup, and I know that because I'm drinking out of the medicine cup that I drank from when we recorded the finale, because it was still on the table.
Anyway, this has been Tota, the post-apocalypse. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you again next time.
Bye.
Bye.